Hello and welcome to Storyteller In Depth, a podcast where we go behind the scenes to learn more about the School of Communications, Media Arts and Design, People, Places and Things. I'm your host, Pat Quigley. Artificial intelligence seems to be growing by the day, and we've heard many stories about where it's currently being used and what's coming next. In our AI series of this podcast, we covered several different areas, from the writing industry to the gaming industry to content creation and more. In today's episode, though, we'll explore a new path with AI, the world of business. To help us navigate is Shane Medill, a 2019 graduate of our Public Relations Corporate Communications program. Shane works at the PR firm Kaiser & Partners, and he co-wrote a white paper called AI Business Strategy, Corporate Communications, and Balancing Advancement, Pocketbooks, and Emotional Change. Shane will take you through some of the elements of the white paper and explain how AI can be used effectively in this type of setting. So without further ado, let's get on to that conversation. Thank you so much, Shane, for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So before we begin, can you first share a little bit about yourself and the work that you do?
Of course. I'm a senior account manager here at Kaizen Partners. I'll refer to it as KMP. I'm a PR agency located in Toronto with offices in Vancouver and Quebec as well. Recently merged with Earnscliffe as well. And so in the process of closing that deal as well. And so additional offices, additional services to come. But within KMP right now, I work with the Financial Services Practice Group with a focus on long form and specialty writing. And so things like annual reports, crisis training simulation sessions, investor perception surveys, those kind of things where you need that kind of in-depth knowledge and expertise in writing skill. I think I originally became interested in the work that I do now through education. And so, for example, I went to McMaster with a major in economics with minors in business and psychology. I gained a lot of work experience at the paper there, including a year as editor-in-chief. And so trying to figure out what I wanted to do afterwards and landed on public relations at Centennial as a combination of that academic and real-life work experience that I had. Just because I was pretty uncertain about what I wanted to do after the student journalism there. And so got engaged in the PR, did well in the program, and went to KMP under the recommendation of Donna, the program coordinator, worked my way up through the ranks ever since. So happy to be here and happy to be at KMP and everything.
That's awesome. And like, what was the genesis of that? Like, what got you into this industry in the first place?
Yeah, for sure. So when actually I was going to say, especially starting in high school, I just had, you know, a love for writing and the English language and everything like that. Didn't really get to do too much of that in economics and education and everything like that. You know, obviously you do quite a bit of writing there, but wanting to get more in depth with that and kind of practice those skills on a more frequent basis. And so that's where the student journalism aspect came in and kind of gaining you know, the experiences there, being able to improve my writing over time, being able to do a service to the community as best I could through the means that I really enjoyed, being able to, you know, report on the local news and, you know, give my opinion in that section and everything like that. So I think PR has been a good continuation of that over time and being able to use my own skills and expertise to help communicate on behalf of people and clients and tell their stories and give their knowledge to the world.
Wow. So recently you co-wrote a white paper called AI Business Strategy, Corporate Communications and Balancing Advancement, Pocketbooks and Emotional Change. So before we kind of get into the more specifics of all of that, how did this begin?
Yeah, for sure. So I would say that this opportunity came about after a good number of conversations with Thomas, who's the co-author of the paper, and all of the expertise that he brings over from the financial services sector and helping tech integration there, and especially within the banking sector in particular, and just kind of figure out how we can contribute to the ongoing conversations. Obviously, AI has been so such a common topic of conversation through media, through social media. You know, everyone has an opinion about it and what we can do with our own expertise and contributing to the landscape, and also to demonstrate the strategic thinking, you know, that we help with our current clients and prospective clients on. And so working with Thomas to kind of figure out what that looks like, eventually landed on a white paper and refining that over the course of a few months to ensuring that our insights would be as evergreen as possible, especially within the technological and AI landscape, given how quickly it can develop over time and how easy it can be to get lost in the weeds a little bit when it comes to every little iteration of every little update that comes out over time. And so that's kind of how it started and how it's progressed since then.
Wow. And for our listeners and also for myself who don't understand some of the jargon that you're using, what exactly is a white paper?
Okay, so basically, yeah. When you think about a research paper, like, for example, if you were doing a school project or something like that, and a teacher asked you to do like a 5-paragraph essay back in the day, you were learning how to write, learning your English skills and everything like that, you give the little essay to your teacher, she marks it, comes back, says, great, you know, work on this, this, and this. Basically, a white paper is a more advanced version of that, where it's just a more comprehensive collection of different thoughts about a particular subject. And so working with Thomas to basically put her thoughts to the page in a nuanced manner, but still trying to use as little jargon so people can understand it who may not necessarily have a technical or an AI background.
Okay, so have you always been interested in AI, or have you already been using it? And is that kind of how the idea of writing the white paper came along?
I would say I've been interested in AI for quite a while now, and especially more recently given all the communications that have happened around it. So I think it's very interesting to see how people communicate different ideas like AI to their wider audiences and through the different channels that we have available to us, whether it is, you know, in a PR context, media relations, corporate communications, that kind of thing, or through social media. Obviously, people trying to, you know, advocate either way, get their own perspectives out, get their own ideas out. And so I think the communications of AI has been a particular emphasis, and especially within, you know, our day-to-day work, how that's started to change over time, keeping tabs on the news and being able to position our clients in those kind of regards, and just kind of the personal interest in AI in general, and especially how it's progressed since, you know, I started using a computer when I was 4 years old and seeing how it's progressed so rapidly over the course of, you know, 2 decades.
For sure. I know I've done a little bit of deep diving into AI myself, both through the podcast and the AI series we did. I think I said that right. Yeah. Anyways, doesn't matter. you know, just learning more and more about all the different types of AI and how much AI has been around for so long. It's just been glamorized almost since ChatGPT and more of the generative AI has kind of come about. So it's interesting to hear about how it's diving into every little bit of our lives and how it's evolving so much over time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's an important point that you bring up too, about how it's changed so much over the last couple of years in terms of the modern applications of what we consider to be AI. And obviously generative AI is kind of the big key topic of conversation these days, but it has been around for so long too. One of the examples that I use on a pretty frequent basis is translations, for example. We've seen AI-generated translations for quite a while. You know, people use Google Translate all the time, for example. But we're still seeing quite a number of people, and even at our firm, too, we just introduced the idea of a dedicated translation service and working on the steps when it comes to that, where people still want the professional, nuanced approach that only a human could give. And so even though that there are, you know, the free versions, slightly paid versions of AI translations, there is still a need for the strategic thinking and all the different nuances that come to translations, for example. And so I think that's one good example of how AI has kind of progressed over time, but it's not necessarily in the main conversation of generative AI. And obviously things like real-time data, supply chains are a good example of this, where you always need to make sure you have your warehouse logistics down and everything's operational and running smoothly and everything like that. The financial sector, Thomas is particularly a good expert at this when it comes to trading on, you know, stock exchanges, for example, being able to do it electronically rather than manually and having to go through different people, for example. So just different instances like that where technological change just continues to happen over time.
And kudos to you and Thomas for writing this white paper. I got a chance to read through it and, you know, kind of disseminate some of the information myself. And although I don't, you know, completely understand all of it, you know, at the beginning, it indicates that AI has some numerous benefits. And it also mentions that in the wrong hands and if used or distributed irresponsibly, AI can lead to several negative outcomes. Why do you think it's important to start with this contrast in the introduction? And in your opinion, why is it important for businesses to know that there can be negative outcomes associated with its use before getting into some of its positive uses?
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do around the hype around generative AI in particular. Obviously, when a business is looking about how they can differentiate themselves from competitors, AI is one of the top things that they're thinking about these days. But it's also not an end-all, be-all solution. It's not something you can just tack on to a business strategy and hope for success. It still requires quite a bit of implementation, quite a bit of investment, quite a bit of communications to make sure that everyone has buy-in. And it actually makes sense for you and your business too. And so there's that way of looking at it in terms of seeing how it fits your business, even though it may not necessarily have to do with a certain problem, whether it is just, you know, cost efficiency or finding ways to integrate and kind of going through the process of how you can actually implement it in that regard, but also just the ethical and legal considerations too. And obviously this has come up quite a bit in conversations and the sentiment that AI could replace people in the future. I know you've had quite a number of conversations in previous episodes with people in the gaming, writing, so on and so forth when it comes to different aspects there, how it can change the tactical day-to-day of what people do, whether that's, you know, a benefit or detriment to the jobs there. And also just kind of on the legal side of things, I think generative AI will continue to come up as, you know, political policies begin to catch up with the innovations that have been made over the last couple of years. I think one good example of this are the debates happening in Canada around the Online Harms Act, even though that's more impacting the use of like harmful deepfakes rather than businesses specifically. It's still something to monitor and a good example of how politicians are more and more aware of the influences of AI over time.
Yeah, for sure. And there's other parts discussed in the white paper as well, talking about real-world examples and a little bit of history. Why do you think it's important when discussing AI to have this whole picture and see where things are and how they're and where and how they are now?
Of course. So I think when it comes to something that can be perceived as new and exciting and game-changing as AI, I think it actually goes back to your point that you mentioned before about how it just continues to develop over time. It's just another milestone on the way. And so I think it's important to be able to ground your expectations and perception in that reality and understand that even though that there are these vast new concepts come out of and dreams of, you know, being able to create Hollywood movies at the press of a button and a prompt, you know, this is just one in a progressing line of technological advancements. And so, you know, technology continues and progresses, you know, businesses learn how to integrate into their businesses faster, cheaper, better than previously. And, you know, these new technologies can cause these sectors to shift as well. Blockbuster is a good example of this, you know, in the physical versus digital distribution of content and how Netflix uses AI and their algorithms to give you, you know, ideally what you want. Sometimes it doesn't work out the way you want it to, but just the idea of, you know, AI being used in those different aspects and giving rise to, you know, new competitors and new companies that are able to integrate it as best they can into the processes. I think that a lot of the conversations around AI tend to be more bottom up and look at the specific tactics and how it impacts someone's day to day and kind of how it impacts like a job role, for example. But I think the top down approach that we've taken here and considering the full picture allows for these kind of like new perspectives and a grounding way of thinking where AI can represent kind of these widespread opportunities like previous technical advancements if it's implemented and communicated properly.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I guess from a consumer standpoint, right, you're only thinking exactly like you said from kind of the forward facing piece, right? It's what Netflix is telling you you want, what Google Translate is translating for you, and you're kind of taking it at face value. But, you know, it's what are some of the other side of it? Like, what is the top or the bottom up, or no, other way around? What is the top down version of this? Like, why should we maybe be paying attention from the other side instead of so much from the glamorous side?
Yeah, for sure. So I think one of the ways that we hear about the top down perspective is when a business reports their earnings, for example. We see at the end of the day, you know what, they've lost a whole bunch of money investing in AI. Oh, I guess it was a failure, it was the wrong decision and everything like that. But one of the things that is kind of underappreciated in that is just kind of like the business strategy and the reason to go for AI in the first place. Microsoft is a good example of this, where they continue to incorporate AI and buy up, you know, all these AI firms and everything like that. NVIDIA has become, I think, the third largest company in the world in terms of market cap because of, you know, the hype around AI and what they've been able to do over the last little while. But being able to look at the top down perspective and, you know, why that is in the first place, understanding the, you know, business moves that they've made over the last little while, also allows you to understand the end result when it does come about. And so if they're acquiring X company in order to do X, you'll eventually see Y in the future, kind of thing. And so going back to like the Netflix example, for instance, seeing what changes they may make in the future when it comes to AI, whether it is algorithm or their internal processes or their HR department, even, for example, internal communications, all those kind of different aspects can be viewed from both perspectives too, whether it is the integration of the strategy itself or the end result that you see as a consumer.
So if we look at this idea of AI in business as a whole, what do you personally think is one of the key lessons you want to communicate to businesses who are thinking about adopting it into their strategy?
I think that one of the difficulties that a lot of businesses have is that they don't necessarily want to be the first ones to try and adopt AI. There's obviously a lot of challenges and there's a lot of scary elements about something like this, being the first one in a marketplace to try to do something, you know, making the first step compared to your competitors, not really knowing if it's worked out in the past or seeing previous examples where companies have invested in AI and it hasn't quite worked out. But I think that looking at the history of technological progressions over time, looking at the history of businesses and how they've been you know, made obsolete in the marketplace because of competitors coming up who are able to better integrate technology into their workflows, I think it's a necessity to think about AI in at least some regard. It doesn't necessarily have to be a complete upending of your business and everything like that. And that's definitely not going to make the most amount of sense for a lot of different sectors and businesses. But being able to do the hard work and understand how it will impact, you know, the day-to-day operations of your employees, the business strategies that you put forward, the proposals, how people engage with your business are all really important considerations. And if you're able to differentiate yourself from your competitors in that regard, it's definitely something that you should move forward with as well. And especially since we have so many historical examples of companies who were successfully able to integrate AI or other technology into their business and come out the other side more successful than they were before. I think that people just tend to get caught up on the new concepts and ideas that companies and AI services are bringing forward these days without fully understanding, appreciating that this has happened in the past before and it's happened quite a number of times just in different contexts.
For sure. And like AI is not going away anytime soon, right? Like everything's just going to continue kind of steamrolling down this hill.
Yeah, I would say so. One of the things that is important to recognize is we don't necessarily know how it's going to progress from here. Obviously, we still have the historical trends and what people are currently pushing. Obviously, ChatGPT is a good example of this, and kind of prompt-based engineering is the term that they tend to use, and being able to like create the actual outputs and everything like that. But one of the things about AI and technology in general is that it is very good at coming up with new solutions we can't currently quantify or think of. And so even going back to like the Netflix example, for example, previously in the pre-blockbuster period, it would have been so hard to conceive that idea in the first place and know that that's actually going to work in the market too. And kind of the risk that it takes for a company to go forth and bring up a solution like that seemingly out of the blue and before, you know, it seemed to have all the right steps integrated and everything like that. So, and especially as generative AI tends to be large language models, it's more like an aggregation of everything that's currently available in terms of writing ideas. But I think that still requires that human strategy consideration and thinking for you and your audiences to understand what AI means to you moving forward. And so I think that it is going to be very interesting to see whether people buy into things like ChatGPT over time, or whether that's more of a business case, or whether we're going to go back to like a more genuine human-to-human interaction. People are going to really desire that, as we've seen a little bit in the creative fields already.
Oh, for sure. So how do you think more businesses will adopt into this technology, and how do you see certain roles potentially changing, at least in your experience thus far in this industry?
Yeah, I think a lot of businesses will kind of try to look at it as a cost-saving measure. And so, again, going back to the creative example, we've seen this with the writer strike, for example, and trying to create outputs at as low a cost as possible, and just assuming that people will be okay with that. But we've seen the quality of AI generation, both in terms of writing and art and everything like that, not be quite up to snuff. People want, you know, people working on the creative fields at the end of the day. And I think there's the level of expertise, the level of nuance that AI just can't replicate at this point. And going back to the idea about translations, for example, I think you can mirror a similar idea here where you have the free translations, you have AI generated translations, and you still have a whole host of professional translators who get paid, you know, a good amount in order to do the work that they do in different contexts, whether it is PR or media events, for example. I remember at the Oscars not too long ago with Parasite winning Best Picture and everything, that all of the hype that was for that particular translator and the nuances that they needed to communicate between Korean and English and not be a direct translation, which is what we usually see in AI regards. So I think that when it comes to the day-to-day, I think the creative fields will kind of experience that progression over time. Again, hard to say because we don't necessarily know how AI progresses from here. But I think for businesses in general, they're going to be looking at it still through that cost-cutting lens, and whether that is, you know, the actual outputs of a consumer-facing employee, or whether that's on their just their back end, for example, whether it is through things like operations and supply chain and everything like that. Honestly, the future might be a little bit more boring than with AI than we come to expect, based on how the conversations and ethics and legal considerations progress from here. But it is definitely something that we'll have to look at from both perspectives of the top down and bottom up.
It's wild to think that it's still so new. It's wild that the AI is still just in its budding infancy, even though it's been around for quite a while. And, you know, just every time I turn around, I learn something new about AI and in all the different industries and how it's impacting all the industries. So it's so cool to get your insights and through the white paper about AI. And we got really fortunate to talk to a lot of professionals in the past little while about AI. And we asked them a question, which I'm also going to ask you, is that if you could have access to any AI tool, which can be imaginary or whatever, what would you love for it to do?
I think a lot about the business case for a lot of AI, and especially through the white paper and through this conversation. Obviously, think about how different businesses can incorporate it into their services. But I think one of the things that I would like to see is kind of more grassroots AI and being able to engage with surrounding communities a little bit more. I think about the idea of, for example, aggregating local events together in one spot rather than searching around all these different resources and sources and everything like that. Being able to compare grocery store prices to one another easily and know where to shop, you know, up the upcoming weekend, learning about pop-up stores quickly, and being able to, I guess, make the city a little bit more walkable in a way, and being able to engage whether it is, you know, close by, or I can, you know, save a little bit of money by going a little bit further. For example, just getting out and about using AI, and again, dedicated people who are able to do that on a consistent basis for different locations around the city, for example.
Those are really good ideas. I never even thought about the grocery one. That'd be so much easier if I could just pop in something to say, I want bananas, and it has all the prices from all the different places. Yeah, like, that would just be perfect.
Yeah, just the idea of using AI to help people's day-to-day, not necessarily work-related. And so helping the personal lives of people, I think, would be like an ideal goal for AI projects. And I think it would help out a lot of people too.
I think you're onto something, Shane. I definitely think you're onto something here. Somebody, if it comes back in the next couple years or next couple months where we get an app like that, we're going to wrap up this conversation and come back to you for sure.
Definitely. So I'm excited. Awesome. I'm excited.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Shane, for the amazing discussion on AI today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
What a wonderful insight that Shane could provide. Using AI to assist and help determine strategy while remaining aware of its downsides if it is used irresponsibly is such an important aspect of this conversation. Now, if you like this conversation, be sure to check out the other AI episodes we have posted and head over to our Instagram @StoryArtCenter and let us know your thoughts. Until next time, I'm your host, Pat Quigley, And this is Storyteller in Depth.